Welcome, everyone. Thanks for joining us. We are going to have a discussion about careers in Android today and what that's like. And we don't really have any specific direction we want to go, but we want to just encourage you to come up and ask questions and whatever you feel like learning about, let's start it off. So, Madonna, do you have anything that comes to mind?
Yes, I have something that comes in mind, and that is please feel free to request to come up and speak. Today it's just going to be, we're going to be freestyling this, so everybody is welcome to speak. If you have good feedback, if you want to share something with the Android community, please come up. Other than that, I think maybe, I was thinking maybe we can do like a talk of our journeys to Android dev, and maybe Matt, do you want to start? Like what got you interested in Android? What made you stay? Why are you still doing it? And do you love it? Or do you think of quitting in the future? Stuff like that.
Oh, man. Yeah, that's a great question. I started Android dev because I couldn't afford Apple products. And so I ended up having, you know, a Windows computer and just it was learning Java at the time. And so the skills were applicable. And it just seemed like a very cool way to start seeing code on something that I could carry around. And it really just led to me being able to take something that I was building, because I like to make little apps to solve some of my own problems, and I'd be able to show them to friends and share them that way. And it turned this like very not tangible way of programming into a way to actually like bring it to someone and show them and get them to interact with it, which I thought was amazing. And it's still something that I love about the profession and working in Android every day, is that we have the ability to touch so many different individuals and improve their lives.
Wow. I'm just like, oh my God, your story sounds like mine. How weird is that? So I began my career first as a junior Java developer that is just building inventory systems. And I remember back in the days, I couldn't see any, I mean, I couldn't like get any feedback from my work because I was a junior developer, and our seniors definitely would get the feedback, like, hey, we don't like this part of this inventory. Maybe you can do this and that. But with that, I started researching on what I can do actually with Java, like Matt said. And then I learned that you can actually build mobile applications using Java. And during that time, I had a phone, a nice Nokia that had, it was colored. It was my first colored Nokia. If anybody here knows about a Nokia.
The screen was color, or the phone itself was color?
The screen was colored because there was the black and white one. I know. The screen was colored and it looked pretty cool. I was like, this is amazing. And then they have all these apps. How are they making this? And I started digging into it, and I was like, actually turns out that those apps are built using Java. And I was like, let me try it. And then I remember just going to GitHub because I knew about GitHub, and just looking around. And then I discovered that there were simple projects that people had done about, like, let's say, just calculation. And I just picked up my idea and thought, what if, because I was almost having my first baby, and I was like, what if I made a simple math application for my baby, because I love math and I do some other things with math. And I was like, interesting. And that's how I built my first application called Simple Math, which was just a simple app where kids could just do addition and subtraction and multiplication, just small numbers. And when they win, they would go to another level, and then there would be like this pop-up coming up. So the design was terrible, but weirdly enough, I launched it on the Play Store. It got 500 downloads with a 4.5 rating. And I was like, oh my goodness, so my work gets appreciated. Like, people here were sending me like good feedback, like, hey, I really love this application for my kids. It's making my kids stay busy. And I was like, okay, this is nice. Back then, we didn't have any fragments, no room. It was so weird. It was just me doing start activity. So it was activities of activities, which was weird. I really love the way Google has maintained the Android development system, which is super awesome right now. Like, there's so much information out there. Back then, there wasn't as much. And with that, I kept, I mean, my story is long a little bit, but that's what drives the passion. So with that, I built now my second application. That is now after learning that Grow with Google was offering like Grow with Google scholarship. And I remember many of my friends now that I even follow on Twitter, that we've stayed connected. We met through the program Grow with Google scholarship. And I built now my second application called Budgeting Buddy. And now it has almost 10,000 downloads with a 4.5 rating. And that's how I stayed in mobile and loved mobile and I still do mobile. So the question that I have, that I had for myself is, do I want to change? Because I do love mathematics and I feel like sometimes maybe I can do data science. So I always been around that. I like kind of like debate myself, do I want to leave mobile at one point in my life? So there's a high chance that maybe in the future I might and go into a more analytical role.
That's awesome. Well, I mean, Google's doing all that stuff with machine learning on mobile as well. So there's definitely opportunity for that sort of mathematics and statistics focused direction if you want to go that way.
Yes, and that actually intrigued me. And I remember creating an open source project for machine learning. It got good traction from amazing ladies and we were trying to do something. But then because I got also interested so much in Android, I continued just with Android. So just kept it pending. But I do love to play around with some Python from time to time.
Very cool. Yeah, so just want to encourage anyone else, come up, share your journey. Where are you starting or where are you in your journey? Or where do you want to see it go? We have a lot of people in this chat who have been on their Android journey for some time and some people who are just starting it. So please come up and share or respond to one of the tweets about the space and share your journey there. And maybe we can just read what you say. However you want to contribute, we would love it. So I actually could talk a little bit about one of the first apps that I made since you touched into your stuff with Budgeting Buddy. And one of the first ones was really similar to Google's smart lock feature, where I really hated having to enter a passcode on my phone at the time because it was just annoying and just something I never really wanted to do. And so I was able to use the device administrator APIs to monitor your current Wi-Fi MAC address. And if you were attached to a certain network, the device administrator would not lock your phone. And if you detach from a network that you had deemed safe, it would unlock it or remove the passcode. So anytime I was at home, I would not have to have a passcode. And anytime I was out, I wouldn't. And then I learned a lot in releasing that because a lot of bad things can happen when you are changing people's lock codes when you release that to the public. And I definitely had to go through a bunch of customer support because I was pretty young and new to the whole deal and didn't think through all of the potential consequences. So it was a great learning experience. And thankfully, Google came out with something that's even better and smarter that I didn't have to continue with that support path. Yeah, it looks like we have Mohammed coming up. What's going on? How are you? I can't really hear you. I'm not sure if it's me or if it's Twitter Spaces.
Yeah, I can't hear him too.
All right, well, we will wait for him to come back. It looks like he's going to try to rejoin. But yeah.
Matt, I just want to say, I think that's a pretty good idea because that really frustrates me too.
Yeah, it's actually built into Android now. If you look for the smart lock settings under your security, you can go and either set it to be by location. So if you set your home as a safe spot or by Bluetooth device, so you won't have a passcode if you have like your headphones or your watch connected or something.
Yes, I saw that too, which makes good sense now to have it. So that's a pretty, and actually, I think now that you mentioned that, I feel like I made mine too, the Budgeting Buddy. Like all my apps just made them based on my need. Like Budgeting Buddy was because I didn't want an application that actually wanted to link with my bank account or one that had me sign in and sign out, you know, and also some ads. So it made it easier just for me just to keep track of. It was definitely a big project. That's why I keep improving upon it now, but yeah, it was pretty awesome.
That's great. What's going on, Ed?
Hey, everyone. Can you hear me?
Yep, loud and clear.
Amazing, amazing. A long-time listener, first-time caller. It's a pleasure to be with you on Friday. I hope everyone's having a great day. I'd like to share my story because my story is a bit of a weird one. I think when it comes to Android, I never wanted to be an Android developer. I actually fell into it completely by accident. I left university, I think, in 2013, and I kind of skipped going what everyone else did when they left university. I skipped going on holiday. I skipped, you know, going on a massive blowout and, you know, enjoying myself. I went straight and looked for jobs. And in London at the time, the majority of jobs going were Java roles. So your standard sort of Java backend, you know, I think everybody kind of knows that sort of space. I think it was all Spring at that point. And, you know, that was kind of what I was looking to go into based on what I knew from university. And I actually applied. I actually got a call actually from a recruiter who had seen my CV, and we went to the same university, and he rang me and said, hey, I've seen your CV. You went to the same university as me. I work with this startup. They want an Android developer. Would you be interested? And I thought, no, but I'll go anyway and see what it's like. And it was great. I met the team, had a great time. And yeah, that's kind of where my Android journey started. It was completely by accident. I ended up being the sole Android developer there for a couple of years and then moved on to an agency. And now I'm at ASOS, which is, you know, a huge app compared to what, you know, where I started. I started with an app that I think had 10 downloads, and now I'm at an app which has got 10 million. So, you know, that's all in the space of 10 years, but it's, you know, it's, and your journey can start just by accident. And, you know, I'm really pleased that, you know, I'm in this space and I got to, you know, I get to meet all of you.
That's awesome. Yeah, I will say, like, I've poked around a couple other development communities, and the Android community is definitely something special. So I'm super just grateful and feel very fortunate that we have this sort of community and connection. And it just is something that seemingly happened up to us, but is also built by us. It's really great.
I will second that. I feel like this is the best community that I've ever been in. And that's why you see, like, I'm having second thoughts. Do I really want to go the other side or just keep growing up and be, you know, higher level? But it's interesting. I love this community.
Yeah. And Steph, how are you doing?
Hey, guys. Doing good. You know, it's Friday. Things are going well. But no, I'm just curious. So, like, right now, I'm like, I'm learning Swift programming at the moment. And obviously, I want to, you know, just be mindful of the two different types of mobile development, right? When it comes to you guys choosing between one or the other, what was the biggest reason why you stuck with Android compared to, like, switching or even, like, learning iOS development, like, on the side, or even just switching to iOS development?
I can take this first. So part of it is I was already learning Java. I was interested in mobile. A lot of friends at the time had been exploring, like, the iPhone and iPod Touch, and there was that whole web app store when that was first launched, and I thought that was really interesting, but didn't really have an avenue to contribute to that with what I had already known. And then Android came around, and the whole notion of it being open and accessible was really attractive to me, instead of iOS, which was an Apple's ecosystem, which, you know, needed the Mac to develop for, and then you needed to pay the yearly $100 to develop and publish, whereas Android, it was a one-time $25 fee. It just seemed much more approachable for where I was in my life at the time. And then coming across the community and the information that is just put out there for free and the people has really what solidified me staying in Android for a long time. I can't stress enough how amazing that the Android community is. It's really great. And seeing iOS and, like, the whole community around going to conferences and stuff, it does not seem as well established or as welcoming. But this could be completely incorrect just since I'm not in those communities. But it's definitely what keeps me around. And then I think we're in an interesting point now where Android and the tooling, as much as we complain about it, is in a really good place compared to other development platforms, namely iOS, where people really struggle with Xcode and complaining with it, especially when projects get to a pretty significant scale. You know, our builds might take a long time, but they don't really fail too often unless something is actually wrong. And then they are pretty consistent in what is actually happening every time you run a build. So there's a lot of complaint, but if we take a step back and think about where we came from, it's way better than it ever was. Madonna, do you have anything to add?
Yes, I just think you started a war with the iOS community. I feel sorry for you. I'm just joking. Okay, so I think what I can say from my side, it was more about, so being, I mean, having started building with activities and just activity and not seen any fragments, I think to me what really made me stay was how Google would keep advancing it. Like, if they had this particular way to do navigation way back, like we had MVC, but by the progress they kept doing to me was pretty interesting, because over time I would see, okay, now we have room and we don't have to use SQLite anymore, which was very frustrating, even though I know it's built upon it, which is super cool. And now we have, let's say, Tilt, which is built upon Dagger too, and Dagger was frustrating. So you see, they're trying to make it more simplified. Knowing the where it began, it's pretty good too, like to have that knowledge. But they're trying to always make sure that things are up to date, bringing in new updates. I know sometimes it's a break. I mean, not everybody loves when it changes like that. But having built, like, we just activities and no fragments, just activities and activities. Oh, it was so tough. I mean, I like it because, I mean, I love the documentation and the videos they do just to help developers. That, and what Matt said, that to me is the deal breaker. It's pretty good.
Yeah. Anyone else who has thoughts? Let us know. Yeah, Ed, I saw you come off of mute.
Yeah, no, I've dabbled in both. I've, you know, been very, very lucky to have dabbled in both. Actually, my iOS journey is even weirder than my Android one. The last Android iOS app I made, I think, was essentially dog Facebook. So think Facebook, but for dogs. Yeah, I mean, that's a whole nother story. But I think the one thing that Android has always consistently done better over iOS, and why I particularly stay, is the DevRel team. And, you know, the relationship we have with, you know, Google as developers, I think, is very, very strong. You know, they're very transparent. You know, it's quite fun. You know, it's quite, you know, we know people within the community that work at Google, and, you know, they're very open to questions. Whereas, as far as I'm aware from my time in iOS, you know, it's a lot more closed in iOS. And I definitely think it's better in Android for sure.
Awesome. Well, I hope, excuse me, I hope that answers your question, Steph. Do you have any thoughts on what we've said? Because it sounded like you were learning Swift.
Yeah, no, 100%. I think, obviously, I want to learn both. I just think it's very helpful for me. And I was just curious. I was just wondering, because, you know, the thing is, there's like a bunch of just different resources that, like, I'm kind of learning through. Like, I'm going through Code Academy right now. And I was going through Udacity initially. And when I started utilizing Xcode, it just seems like it's not all that user-friendly. So I'm trying to figure out, like, for somebody who's never done development before or any type of software engineering, like, the best way to dive into, like, mobile development without, like I guess, splitting out my hairs. You know, I was just really curious to see if there's any like, resources that you guys would recommend for somebody in, like, just my position who's just really curious and wants to make a career change into mobile development.
Yeah, of course. I would definitely recommend Google's Code Labs. We can tweet out a link to those, but essentially they put together these walkthroughs of page by page. You get a prompt and there's either, you know, it's for a specific topic or it's for like an intro to the language or whatever you really are looking for. They have a ton of them up there, and it's just a step-by-step walkthrough where you get a base project and you start working on that, and then you iteratively contribute to it throughout the tutorial and end up, you know, either learning about an API or language features or whatever it is that you decided to start with.
I think think I've also like shared a tweet on this space. If you scroll up there, I think I'd asked the community just to share the bookmarked like Android resource, and I got great feedback. So that might be pretty helpful too. Just go through that thread and you'll see most of what people use and the videos they watch. I think that was pretty awesome. And also what Max said was cool too. That's awesome. Welcome to the community.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that, Madonna.
Anytime.
All right, looks like, please let me know if I'm pronouncing this incorrectly. But
it's Jeremy, sure, for Jeremy.
Okay. How's it going?
It's pretty good. Yeah, I just wanted to speak because I related with Ed's story about how he came to be an Android developer. I started my journey about 2 years ago. It was right after I joined the full-stack Java web dev bootcamp after graduating college. And it was literally like my last option. Like I was like desperately searching for jobs after the boot camp. And I was like on my last week of money, and I found this Android developer internship that was obviously paid. And you know, I never thought anything Android. I thought compared to web development, it would be a lot simpler and a lot easier. And when I started learning, like from all the senior devs there, I was just fascinated by how, like, I guess, complex Android development can be, and you guys mentioned it before about how, like, you know, welcoming the community is, and obviously Android being open source, and I just found it being a very welcoming community, and I kind of just never looked back. And you know, like halfway or over a year through my journey as a professional Android developer, because I was an intern for about 8 months, and now I'm really enjoying it and just loving it. So just happy to be here and happy to hear everyone else's stories, how they came upon it too.
Awesome. Yeah, thanks for being here. And thanks for joining us and coming up and sharing with us.
I think also if anybody is in the space and wants to come up and share with us, please feel free to do so. We're welcoming everybody. And I think on that, Matt, Dinora did say she might not make it. She's an Android GDE, but she had a question for us. So I think I will go ahead and ask that question, and then you can answer it, and I can also try to answer it. So this is what she asked. She asked, let me go back here and read. She said, I don't want to be a manager. I'm not built for it, but I'm being, so I think basically to just sum up, I think her question was, if she doesn't want to be a manager, she wants to do more coding, what types of roles can she have where at least she can go up but still do more coding, not as much as managerial? So I'm not sure if we have that role, but what do you think? And then she was thinking of in terms of maybe a principal engineer.
Yeah, I think the first step is to definitely do some research into your current company that you work for and any potential companies you might want to move to, because some of them, like some of the ones in my past, don't have the higher senior level roles of engineer. They very much push into the managerial tract, and that is how you progress at that company. So to start off, make sure that higher engineering level roles are available to you. But from that point, with that sort of engineering culture, you should be able to move up and still stay in some of the code, but it might just be different code than you are maybe used to. It might be more like either architecture level things or something that is not as user facing in terms of, you know, you're writing these buttons for UI. Those are more something that might it's all depending on company structure, but it might be something that is more for, you know, less experienced people, because they're very tangible things that you can jump in and see your changes immediately. And then some of the higher theoretical, like code organization or project health, those sorts of things that permeate across teams and across individuals are really where you can start making like more widespread impact as a higher level engineer. But it really just comes back to make sure the company that you're at has those opportunities. If they don't, maybe you have a conversation with, you know, some like your CTO or below levels that could have that sort of impact for you to create them, if that's something that is potentially possible. That would be pretty challenging from my experience, but I'm not going to say it's not doable. Yeah. Any other thoughts from you on that one, Madonna? Like, that's a complex question, but it definitely exists. There are companies that have those engineering structures well-defined.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I feel like you touched on most of what I was thinking too, like mostly just consult with your company, find what roles they have. And I think, like, for instance, in our company, we have a principal engineer who does a lot of coding, actually, because he likes just to be there, just doing amazing stuff, know what he likes. So I think that might work pretty well. I'm not sure about what a technical lead does, but maybe you can. And I also feel like you don't have to be. I know I just shifted my thoughts a little bit there. I'm thinking mostly what she's afraid of is maybe the meetings, which I think everybody nowadays don't like many meetings, which makes sense. But I'm thinking also if you're in a technical lead kind of like role, you can still do coding because you might take up some tickets that are pretty, you know, pretty that are bigger that you're like, I really want to help my team get this pushed through, stuff like that. Yeah, so it's complex, but definitely looking into company structure again and finding out what works for her too. Because at the end of the day, it's just going to be what she wants and what she thinks will be best for her.
Yeah, and the meeting thing is hard to escape because the more that you become a higher up level, the more that people need to hear from you and that you need to lead them. So being a tech lead, like, yes, you are going to probably write less code because you're
I think we might have lost Matt, can you hear us? Okay.
Yeah, so I think I left off at so being a tech lead, part of your position is going to be empowering your team to do better work, and that might mean taking meetings with people above them so that you can then bring that information to them and organize it in a way that enables them to do their best work. So there is a challenge in terms of managing your level of meetings, but being able to do that can be just as rewarding as, you know, delivering code every day, because you can track your team's progress and how much code they are delivering every day. And if your team as a whole is contributing more, then you know you're doing a pretty good job.
That's well said. I think we had Shadisha. I think he's still connecting.
Well, yeah. So while we're waiting for them to connect, were there any other questions? I know there were a couple that she quoted in the one tweet about the space. Let me see if I can pull that up.
Yes, and also I think we have some of the thread too.
Oh, great.
We can go through it.
Yeah, we could just touch on, like, what is your day-to-day like, Madonna? So a day in the life of you as an Android engineer.
Yeah, great question. So my day-to-day, because I build an SDK, so my day-to-day is pretty interesting. So mostly I'm advancing features or trying to fix bugs or just working on something new completely. And mostly it's just figuring out, like, where I left, because we have a lot of Rx in our code system. So it's interesting how actually Android is, because you might work with coroutines in another company, and then another company you're in deep with the Rx. So mostly we have Rx stuff. So I'm always thinking about how I'm going to be connecting two things together, making them combine to latest, and do these observables and make some magic happen. And also a lot of Googling. Like, now I'm working on some animations. I'm not a fan of animations. So I have one activity that needs to animate. And then I have this image reader that I need to listen to when it's available and hide it. Yes. So that's that's how it looks like.
Yeah, animations can be pretty tricky. Yeah, anyone else wants to?
Sorry, I just wanted to say, not to scare people. It's not very scary. I think it's pretty good. And also just wanted to add one more piece, add in tests, which is part of it.
Yeah, definitely need to write a lot of tests. Hey, Vern, how's it going?
Hi, it's going on fine. I am just trying to, actually, I had a question about a model, view model, basically. And first of all, a very good evening to all of you here. And this is my first time in this kind of a setup. I'm very excited to hear all of you. And it's such a great learning right now going on. So my question is, basically, it's like a confusion. It's not a question sometimes, because I think it started with a question, but now it has become a big confusion. And for that, I have gone through, all of the, it's like I have gone through many pages in Medium. I've gone through many FASA, many great GitHub repos, and find out, I was trying to find out the real, that one answer I'm looking for. But I thought, okay, let me explain you that. Okay, what happens? We have a repository. And then it's like it was a little way beyond maybe 2 years. Live data was lying in the repository, and we were getting connection to the view model. So this is how I understood that the live data is going to stay in repository, and it can stay in view model as well, or maybe in repository, not in view model. So later on, when I started reading about the Android architecture, or the clean architecture, that means I found that it should not lie in the repository live data. It should always be inside the view model, because it might have with the views, because it should be independent and stuff like that. A lot of nice technical words. And then I had a struggle to actually make it live there suddenly. Well, before that, I was using RxJava. So of course, that is very easy to escape. You can put your flowable or completable over there, or maybe you can avoid live data in repository. But when I'm using live data, then it becomes a different situation. So, and then the flows came. So I was something like, there was RxJava, then in the middle, it was live data, and then Kotlin flows. But I'm still in the middle. I'm trying to find that right way. I'm still looking for it. So sorry for this little bit long question. Yeah. So if you can have a look on it.
We have a hand raised up. Matt, do you want to take that first? Because that's an interesting question.
Sure. So just to make sure I'm understanding correctly, you're asking, where should the live data objects live in the project?
Yeah, and actually my question is, what should a repository have? Is it the interactors with the live data or without the live data, or what should go inside repository actually if view model is having live data?
Yeah, so this is another highly debated topic that I might regret expressing an opinion on, and I know Adam in the chat or in the listeners is going to message me about this probably, but live data I think should definitely be in the view model. Live data is the best way really to get any of your information from the view model to the view, and it helps keep your views as basic as possible in terms of having to do any processing. That can all be handled in the view model, and then any sort of a configuration change will be able to be repopulated by that same live data. The repository should technically be able to do its own thing, whatever that is. For this example, we'll just say we make a network call to fetch a list of pictures. You can delegate to, a service or whatever it is that you are set up to go and fetch that information, and then have functions on the repository, whether it's with RxJava or Kotlin Flow or however you want, to call and return that data to the view model. So the way that you could set it up is have a view model that has your live data, which is the communication between the view and the view model, and then also have the repository instance in the view model, which handles your connection to your services. And then the view model is responsible for converting and doing whatever manipulation you need business logic wise to take the repository's response from the service, give it to the live data so that you can display it. And please let me know if that makes sense or if you have any questions on that. I would love to talk more about it either now or even after.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's making sense a lot. And the only thing is that I wanted to question the developers.com article about, okay, live data should never be in repository. When it was supposed to be not in repository, why I see a lot of examples used by Google developers or maybe other developers using live data inside repository. I also read about the consequences, but I just don't understand what kind of consequences is faced, because I never faced anything because I made a very, very bad repository connection. I made a very bad project on GitHub, which I see it and every day I don't like it. But I have made a lot of live data calls from there and nothing, like, I don't see any kind of a problem. So what was the problem which really made, you know, the Android art developers.com article write down like this, that you should never use it in the first place? Yeah.
So kind of jump in a little bit. One thing that I've learned in Android development is that there's so many ways to fix a problem. Like, you might have one problem that can be fixed in three different ways. And one thing that I've learned is that opinions will always be there. And what I always try to do is that, especially when doing, like if I'm given a task, right, and I'm told to come up with a solution, I try to go get the best of the solution I can get. But if I'm asked to completely do it over again from my initial implementation, I always raise a question like, what was so bad with my implementation that I need to change it, you know? And then that brings up the discussions like, okay, so basically this is why we shouldn't be doing this because, and then I need examples because sometimes I might be stubborn, which is okay sometimes to be, because you just want to understand why was your way not so okay, that there's a new way that you should follow. For instance, the debate about like flow and live data, that is pretty hot in our Android world right now, because I remember even at work, we were discussing about should we use the live data or should we use the flow. So yeah, that's going to be there. And mostly what I can say is, as long as your logic, you're following the correct logic that you feel like should work best, and you got two or three people agreeing with that, you shouldn't worry about like an article saying don't do this or don't do that, or because that might be just one person's opinion. And then again, don't forget there is three ways or four or five ways of doing one solution in Android. Like, you'll give somebody this task, someone else, and then they will all come up with the different ways and it all works. How amazing is that?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I think a lot of the problems that developer.android.com tries to warn of is ones that can happen when you start to reach a certain scale or a bunch of users that might use your app in ways you don't expect. But I think Adam has a point that he wants to make here, so I'm going to throw the mic over to him.
Yeah, so I don't know the answer to this for sure, but this is actually something I had thought about in the past too, about like live data in repositories. And I remember when that was recommended and then suddenly it wasn't. And I think part of it came from like, so Google historically avoids recommending RxJava. A lot of people use it, but Google as an organization, you'll hardly ever find anything that they would tell you to use it. And, but that's hard because reactive programming is important. And so I think that there was a brief period where people are like, well, I want to make these repositories that are reactive. Like, I have a room database and I want to know when it changes and I want multiple emissions. And at this point, Google had come up with live data, and that was a way to do sort of like, not reactive, but have this observable pattern in Android, right? And so they made it so that like Room could expose live data that people could observe to. I don't remember the fine print about why people didn't like that or what the problems were. If I had to get, because I don't remember the inner workings of live data, but if I had to guess, I think it was around the idea that live data is supposed to be like, you know, lifecycle friendly, but your repository is completely independent of life cycles. And I think some people saw weird behavior there, even though you may have not. I also never experienced that, but I've seen a lot about it on Twitter. But I think that's probably why they moved away from it and why, you know, now they prefer the Kotlin coroutine flow way of doing reactive programming. I think that's the rough like historical context there. I hope that makes sense. But to Madonna's point, like what some people had issues with in their app, you may not have had in yours. And if it worked for you, then I don't think you should feel guilty about it. Just trying to provide some context on why I think the general recommendation moved away from that and where it came from in the first place.
Yeah, and I just want to jump in and say, I got some DMs from Yossi Wolf about an article that he wrote, and I just pinned to the space about why you should not use live data in repositories. So it'll be a nice deep dive for you on that.
Thank you, Matt. Thank you, Madonna.
You're welcome. That was a great question.
Yeah, thanks so much for coming and joining us.
You're welcome.
We have a couple hand raised. I think MBOBOCO, you were first.
Yes, thank you so much, Matt. So I was just going to respond to the question about repositories and lifecycle, right? So the first thing I want to, Varun, the first thing I want you to understand is that live data is tied to the Android lifecycle, right? The meaning of this is that you want to keep your live data as close as possible to your views, which is of course the view model at this point, right? So the meaning or what the other explanation I should give you for repositories is that the repository is actually your connection to your data sources. That could be your remote data source or your local data source, right? Your view model, your view is not supposed to jump directly over to your repository. Your view should interact, should observe your view model. And the view model is supposed to make that transaction should actually happen between the view model and the repository. So I hope all these great answers you've gotten really helps you to understand one thing, one very important reality, which is that there's a whole lot of ways to do different one thing in Android, I think in programming generally, right? But there's always going to be a give back or something more like that says, okay, if you had done this way, it'll have actually worked better. I hope this really helps for you. But yeah, sure. So I was just going to mention, if you need further help, I'm going to follow you now. And if you need some extra help, I'm very happy to point you to the right resources that will help
you. Thank
you
so much. Right. Definitely.
That's
awesome. Yeah, thank you for offering to do that. That's really, really nice. Did you have a question as well, or were you just looking to answer that one?
I was just going to offer some insights for Varun.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. And then let's move on to Abhishek.
Hi, everyone. Hope you can hear me.
Yep.
I just wanted to basically just share my journey and kind of tie it to a thing that Varun said. Being an Android developer for about 7 years now, started off as like a design technologist, basically putting UI, UX mockups for people, and eventually got into like production level engineering for Android, worked for Samsung, worked for Salesforce now, so I work on their Android apps. One thing that I would like to mention to Varun and folks who are in that boat where they see some recommendations from Google and they feel that they probably aren't doing the same right thing. I felt the same way when I read through the recommendations, and having done 7 years of Android development, I can still say I feel like an imposter sometimes when I read some of the recommendations. But the thing I've learned over the years is that those recommendations are meant for the majority of folks who are just getting started out, to give them a platform to build scalable apps, essentially. So hey, if you're building a new app, you're building a to-do list, you're building something that is very simple, that framework is going to get you moving faster and moving in a direction that would help you scale the app in the future. Those generally don't, I mean, I would not use them as a condemnation of other ways of doing the same things, which, you know, other speakers like Adam and Madonna have already said. So just wanted to put in some perspective that even after like, working for 7 years in the Android field, I still look at those recommendations and I still feel like an imposter sometimes because I might not be following them to the letter.
Yeah, they're more like guidelines.
Yep.
Cool. Yeah, sure, all right, looks like Yossi was able to figure out his Twitter Spaces issues and come join us.
Thank you so much for having me up here. I really hope the issues are all worked out. Yeah, just wanted to kind of go back to that question of life data and repositories and what was said previously about life cycles. And that's something, you know, that you don't want to have in your repositories, you know, layer wise is definitely right. And then there's this kind of like big other thing where if you look at what life data was intended for, which is also kind of mentioned previously and talking about the context of why it exists, is that you basically want to, you know, Google wanted to create a way to have a stream-based solution for data communication between presentation and UI layer. And something that you would see, you know, so say you have a view model or presenter, whatever you want to call it, and you expose some life data from it. And then in your fragment or activity or view or whatever you have, you start listening to it. And then in your observer, you get a new event, you get some new data, and you want to use that data. You want to do something with it, right? And typically you'll want to bind it to some UI. Say you want to update text with text, or you want to update a buttons on click listener or something, right? And all of the operations, or a lot of the operations on views, require you to be on the main thread. So what life data does is it calls observers on the main thread automatically. Now, that's great because it, you know, takes a lot of kind of like boilerplate off of you and like unnecessary annoying thread switching, which is good. But life data transformations are implemented using observers as well. Now, if you have a life data transformation, so that's any kind of like map function or switch latest, anything like that, the observer, so that mapper will be called on the main thread. So if you take one life data and then you try to map its data and you do some expensive operation in that mapper function, what you'll end up with is blocking the main thread, which is obviously not great. And it's kind of like really easy to shoot yourself in the foot with that, and not necessarily always easy to notice until it's like way too late because your app is like, you know, freezing all the time and stuff. So yeah, there are a lot of reasons, you know, to recommend other APIs, but this is also one of them, and one of the things that we really, yeah, noticed and that really tripped us up.
Awesome. Well, thanks, Yossi, for joining us, and sorry about all the issues that Twitter Spaces presented you originally, but glad we could figure it out and you could come up and share that with us. There's a lot more information about this stuff in that article, and I'm sure feel free to reach out to Yossi with questions about that. Yeah. So if anyone else has any questions, please come up and ask, or if you want to share anything about your Android developer journey or career or questions about the career and what it's like, please come up and ask that as well. We have a couple that we got in replies to a couple tweets, so I'm going to go pull those up real quick. But while I do that, Madonna, do you have anything that you're thinking about right now?
Yes, I wanted to shout out a few people in the space today that I admire and follow on Twitter, and you can give them a shout out. Josie is one. Adam is one. Adam has a great, what is it called? A great streaming service. Please subscribe. Please join him. If you want to learn how to, make Android devs app, just follow him. And also Moyin, I see you there. I need you in the space soon. We need to hear from you. And also Maski, who is a great Android GDE too. Is it like an OG? Yeah, like, you know, he's been in the industry for a while, and many more. And Hamid too, who always been there in our spaces. I hope I did a great job. Shouting out.
Yeah, that's awesome. All right, so it looks like we got a request. But while we wait for them to connect, I'm going to ask one of the questions we got as a reply. That question is, so any recommendations for beginners in the Android dev journey? Or what would you recommend doing? What would you recommend avoid doing? Hey, yeah, we can hear you. Can you hear us?
I think it got disconnected.
So I have one question. I might sound as like a little bit weird, but we are working on one project for last mile deliveries where we are delivering the like groceries to the customers. We are facing one issue like for few devices, like in India, we have a Vivo, Oppo type, like Realme devices where, you know, we cannot continuously run any service on our mobile application. So it will be great if anyone can like point if we are doing anything.
I'm not sure I understood the question pretty well because you were breaking up a little bit. Not, did Josie or Adam or Matt get the question?
I did not, but if you could repeat it, that would be great, please.
Yes. Or if you're having difficulties connecting with the internet, you can just write it down or just send Matt or I a DM and then we can read out the question loud. If that's helpful.
Okay. Well, while we wait for them to come back with their question, Meet Shah, I know you just came up to ask something as well. How are you?
Yes. Yeah, I'm doing good. So basically, I had a query. I'm working as an Android developer for like past more than 2 years. But being in this stream, I'm like, you know, with Java, Kotlin, and I'm still a bit confused about the exact roadmap that I should follow. Like, what things should be considered in a, you know, to take the journey further? Because it's getting like a little bit mixed up, like there is Flutter in the market. Then there is some, you know, proper roadmap. Till now, like, I'm able to solve the issues and stuff, even develop the great stuff also. But still a bit confused about what exact roadmap should be followed.
Yeah, so whether you want to do Flutter or Android, I'm biased. I will say stick with Android. I think it's a really good option and fun to learn and good to work with. Android is a very dominant market all around the world. So I think that it's something that's going to be around for a long time as well. In terms of our roadmap, though, there is a really good open source roadmap by the GitHub user Skydoves, which I will tweet out and pin to this space for you to look at. But it goes through a bunch of different things.
Yeah, sure. You can. That would be great if you could, you know, give some point or whatever, a DM or whatever. Yeah. Hello.
Yes. Yeah, I'm going to tweet that out right now and then pin that and please take a look at it. It's really good. But yeah anyone else up here who has any advice?
Not a question, you can say as a confusion. Like I'm often more confused about, you know, the architecture patterns to start with. Like, for example, I get a project. I'm like, which architecture pattern should be, you know, preferred more or how should I, like, I start thinking about the, you know, future scope of the project and I bit get confused that like how even a small module will get implemented. So is there any tips or whatever advice you would like to give?
Hi, sorry about that. Had a little bit of a connection issue. Madonna, are you back?
Hello.
Yes. All right. Sorry, just dealing with a little bit of connection issue. Your question was about adding. It depends on the problem. There's a lot of different architectures that could work better for different teams, whether it's MVVM or MVP or MVI or whatever it is. They all have different pros and cons. It's a lot to go into now. There's definitely some really good articles out there about them and that I would recommend reading up. I know Adam, who's a speaker right now, has written one called MVWTF, which goes through a bunch of them. A really good article. I'm not sure. I think that's on Dev2, Adam. Is that right?
Yeah, I can send you a tweet that you can pin. One sec.
Perfect. But yeah, so did you have like a specific question about a certain pattern or...
No, not a certain pattern. Like I often get confused about decision making with patterns, like architecture patterns, like how the stuff will be called from the UI and how the, you know, stuff from the services will be shown on the screen.
Okay, so, that's kind of similar to what we were talking earlier with the live data stuff and how that is going to carry your data from your view model to your view. Yeah, so I would just focus on keeping your pieces of your architecture separate and using the appropriate way to transfer that data from spot to spot, whether it's Kotlin Flow or RxJava to get information from your service and then bring that into the view model somehow and then add that into the view from the view model with live data or state flows with Kotlin if that's the way you want to implement it.
Correct, yeah. Yeah, sounds good, yeah.
Cool. And then I will share that tweet from Adam about the different architectures as well and give that a look. It's really helpful.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, so I would like to add on to that for architecture thing. Guys, this is Balwinder.
Hey, thanks for joining. Yeah, happy to hear more from you.
Yeah, it's my first ever, you know, joining such channels over Twitter. So yeah, what I would like to add is you can certainly, you know, try MVVM and more likely MVVM plus clean architecture. And when we talk about architecture, especially for Android apps, we should, you know, explore more on the dependency injection frameworks, Qwine or Hilt, Dagger and all that. And the best place to learn the architecture and all that stuff is the Google Code Labs. So I think that's the place we should, you know, refer to when we have to learn the architecture and all. And yes, obviously, research more about coroutines, flow, you know, hot stream, cold stream, all that things. So yeah, that's what I wanted to suggest.
That's amazing, Balwin. I think I'd also to add on that, it feels like to me the Code Labs are pretty nice and they have like exercises you can follow too, which like ask you to implement it and then you read through it and I find them to be pretty helpful.
Exactly.
So yeah, that's very true.
Yeah, and the best part, they are always, you know, updated with the latest trends in the Android development. So I think, you know, we should always refer to those. That should be the source of truth, I believe, for, you know, learning anything when it comes to Android architecture or whatever latest in Android.
Yeah, that's very true. And I think we had Fareed and Mohammed who have questions too. So Fareed, do you want to go first? Yeah. Oh, sorry. Thank you very much, Baldwin, for that amazing feedback.
Thanks.
Okay, thank you everyone for adding me to the space. And I just wanted to ask if you can recommend me some open source projects for Android so I could contribute and learn more about different code bases and code styles.
That's amazing because actually now that you mentioned that, I did a tweet the other day too asking people to share their GitHub profile and if they have an open source project to share. And I think it got great traction. And we had so many people just drop in their project. So I think I will share that here on the space. As you can see on top, if you scroll on top of this space, there's some pinned tweet. Like check out this video where you can learn about Adam's work. You can also check about Adam's about MVVM. And then also we have a good article on don't use live data on repository. And then this one here is where you can, I shared one where you can get some Android resources. And then Matt has shared one where this you can DM us and then one where you can look at apps. So I'm going to share the one where you can look at the open source project and you can, I think there's a new, you can add something to save a thread, which is pretty helpful these days where you can just always reference it later. So I'll do that for you, Fareed, as we welcome Mohammed. Mohammed, if you have a question, feel free. I'm just going to be sharing that tweet right now.
Yeah, thank you.
I have asked my question.
Oh, you're welcome, Ferry.
I have asked my question. I am repeating it. I have a question that what are your recommendations for a beginner? I know Java. I have been programming in Java for almost 2 to 3 months. I have a good knowledge of Java. And now I am shifting towards Android. So what are the some resources for a beginner? And basically, this is my question.
That's a great question. And again, I think that one touches back to what I just answered, which is where the resources are. I feel like many people in the community shared some of the resources that to go to, and also the Code Lab there, like the Code Lab from Google, and where you can just find those. Just scroll through in the pinned tweet on the top, you'll see most of the resources. And then once you see them, you can just click on the threads, and then you can just one by one just look at what people have shared in there. Like the one I've shared currently is the one that Faree is looking for. It's on top, where I ask, hey, Android developers, let's share a GitHub profile. And if you have any open source project, please mention it. And then so many people mentioned their open source project where they're actually welcoming people to like contribute for free, which is awesome. Please feel free. And also another one that I know, we did host Leland. He's the founder of Mobile Dev, and they're looking for contributors on their open source project. You can also look at them too. And please let me know, Faree, if you're not able to access the tweets, so that I can just send them to you directly on your DM. And Hamid.
Yeah, I'm able to access the tweets.
Oh, you're able to access them? Cool.
Yeah.
First tweet, hi Android Dev, what's your favorite Android sources? Yeah, I am able to access.
You've seen it? You've seen it, Mohammed?
Yes, cool. Yes, I have seen it.
Great.
The other tweet you mentioned about some contributors, can you mention it again?
Yeah, the contributors one, it's here where we have like open source project. If you want to contribute, that's the first one. Just scroll, there's a couple of them there. There's a couple of pinned tweet. If you click on that tweet, it should take you directly where the tweet is, and then it has a thread. And in the thread, you can just read through like the open source project that people mentioned they have.
Yeah, I got it.
Perfect. Okay.
And just to add a little bit to that, feel free to reach out to those people in the project, you know, start an issue if you want to work on something, or comment on an issue asking if they're looking for contributors on that thing. And that's a really good way to start a connection with someone in the community that's writing and maintaining that project, but also start learning and let them know that you're open to getting help.
That is very well said, Matt. That is very true. And many of them actually do mention they are welcoming people to do that. So that's awesome. Hamid, your hand is raised, and then we'll go to Abish.
Hey, everyone. Yeah, so Ahmed Tequila. I'm a software engineer specializing in Android. I work for a company called Luno. It's a cryptocurrency company. My colleague, actually, Maya, is in this space as well. Yeah, so I'm basically just, I don't have a question. I'm actually just here just to answer wherever I can. So in terms of open source projects, in addition to what Madonna said there, that awesome thread there with everyone just mentioning their different projects. There's also a community as well, which was started by a guy called Eddie Jaud. Hope I'm not butchering his name. So he basically started this awesome community. It was actually the winner of the GitHub Nova 2021 Community Growth Award on GitHub. So basically he started this thing called the Eddie Hub. So it's eddiehub.org, eddiehub.org, which is basically an open source community aimed at encouraging and promoting communication, best practices, and technical expertise in an inclusive and welcoming environment. So I was fortunate to be in a space where Eddie was actually just...
Oh, no. I know that happens sometimes.
Betrayed by Twitter again.
I know. When you... Oh, okay, you're back. Go.
Was I gone? In here, I was just speaking.
You're gone.
You were just about to get to the resources or whatever it was that was being talked about in that other space.
you gotta love the space, to the spaces, eh? Yeah, so basically I was saying eddiehub.org. It's basically a place where that's actually where you can go and sign up if you want to join this community. And it's basically a community of other open source contributors from around the world who actually come together. And then there are also projects there where you can contribute to. You also have, there's also, I think, a repository where you can submit your name there just so that you can be part of the community and just raise your hand and say, okay, I'll I'd like to contribute that type of thing. It is a really awesome community, at least one of the many communities that are out there. So edihub.org is one of them. And then in terms of beginner resources, so when I started Android development in 2015, I wasn't fortunate enough to have as many resources as they are right now. But back then, what actually helped me, so Coursera had a course, it was about 8 weeks or so, that helped you start Android development, just starting to understand it. And then from there, I moved on to Udacity. And there I did a Android developer nano degree. That I feel is the most comprehensive course that you could ever do, because they're always updating it according to the best practices that are there right now. So when Kotlin became the first language, they actually adopted that, included it into the course, and it was now included in it, and you learned everything about Kotlin. So now you mentioned that you're actually doing Java and you like to switch to, I'm referring to you, Mohammed. You mentioned that you're doing Java and you like to learn Android. So Kotlin is the preferred language for Android development. So I would recommend just finding courses there. There are, if I'm not mistaken, I've actually followed you on Twitter now, so I can actually go and get all of these resources for you and I will send them to you. But basically there is, if I'm not mistaken, at the time there was a free Kotlin bootcamp. You can just go and just learn how to build in Kotlin and then actually then take on a free Android developer course. So either on Udacity, Udemy also has, there are also a bunch of creators as well who are always creating content on YouTube just to try and help the community as much as they can. And all of this info, I will send it to you via DM. Yeah, that's all I want to say.
Wow, that's amazing. And I applaud you for that. And I also wanted to mention one thing before I give the mic back to Matt a little bit. I wanted to say, if you're also on the space and have like an open source project and you want anybody to contribute to your project, please feel free to drop it in the link and then we can share with everybody. And then, yeah, they get to join.
I just want to jump in and say thank you, Ahmed, for offering to be such a resource for people and other people who have come up and spoken. Like everyone in here has just been so wonderful and amazing, and it just further reinforces how great this community is. And I love that everyone wants to uphold that environment for everyone else, and it's just incredible. I really appreciate all of you.
I second that, and I'm just gonna add plus 100. And I think our next speaker was Abish. Abish, you had a question?
Hi, it's Abhishek.
Out? Oh, yeah, sorry, Abhishek. Thank you.
Yeah, so hi, everyone. So I'm a software developer, and I've been working in Android for like 2 years now. So what I feel like, there was one question about the architecture and the live data and stuff. So I want to comment on that. I don't have a question right now. So basically what I feel that since Google has been recommending few architecture like MVVM and they are promoting it, so their different platform, I feel that most people who are starting Android these days are more focused on the architecture and they are doing one-to-one copy, like how they are doing, I'm also going to do that without understanding why we are doing it. Or they are just going to do like copy-paste the live data or the flow or state flow and into their project. And that's how they are doing it without understanding what's going on and why we are doing it. So I feel like along with the architecture, you should understand the software development principle, like just the basic ones, like the dependency injection, why we do it, what's the benefit of it, along with that solid principles. So if you start going through that and then learn the architecture, you'll understand most of it. And not on that, you'll make custom solutions or how you can improve your application and move from the to-do application or the node-based application to much more advanced and scalable applications. So that's what I want to say. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, Abhishek. I think that's a good point. I do know, however, that like different companies work differently, because I do know. So the reason is to I'm saying that I remember there was a company that was very deep into solid principles and then they decided, oh no, we don't like them anymore. But that's always, I think, people's opinion, which is okay. So good point. Thank you. Matt, did you have anything?
Yeah, I really like that point as well, because I think a lot of this architecture and ways of organizing code and projects is to help maintain them in a team environment and at a certain scale where there are multiple people contributing, and it makes it very explicit to know where things are and when things go wrong, what to change. But you don't need to do this to get started out. It's something that you can definitely learn later down the road. And if I were to go and, you know, have some free time and program on my own for fun, I would not waste any time, no matter how loud the little voice in the back of my head screams I should be doing better architecture for this, just because it's going to make you move so much more slowly. And in terms of learning how to do Android, the Android ecosystem is so large that there's no way you'll be able to touch all of it anyway. So just have fun implementing things, and it doesn't have to be perfect when you're just doing it to learn. Just make something and move on to the next piece that you want to build, and have fun not making it perfect, because as soon as you get that job, then you're going to have to pay attention to those things, and it's going to move much slower just because of the nature of how you have to keep it organized.
Oh yeah, that's a pretty good point, because it brings in the aspect of actually interviewing. When you're doing interviews and you expect it to either build a project on like during live coding, or do a take home project. During that time, definitely try to make sure that, especially the take homes, try to make sure that you make them as good as you can, but not as complicated, because it might be harder when you're doing the live coding challenge, not explaining your code. And also when you're doing it live, because there's those times of interviews where, like, now you open your Android Studio and then you start running a project from scratch. In that kind of scenario, definitely pick the easiest ones that you remember. Because again, like Matt said, sometimes it might be, you might overcomplicate it, which might make you spend more time trying to figure out, okay, so how do I need to do this, and how do I need to, which, and then you're only like given 60 minutes to do a live coding interview. So pretty tough. But one thing though, one question that I wanted to throw around, because I think we mentioned, we'll discuss like interviews too a little bit. I was wondering, Matt and everybody here on the space, in the speakers, would you rather do a take-home project or a live coding where you're given like a design or an algorithm? I just want to hear that. If that's an option. And why?
Yeah. Ahmed, I would love for you to answer this. Please go ahead.
Thanks, Matt. Yeah, so having actually done both in the space of my career, I much prefer a take-home project, mainly because, so not really mainly, but one of my reasons actually is because I can get very nervous in a interview situation, and it can happen to anyone. The nerves can get the better of you, and it is very easy to forget certain concepts. You might be asked a question and you might forget, or you might just know it, you know, or remember whatever it is. Whereas a take-home project, you actually take your time to actually develop this thing, even though in some instances you might be given a short space of time. I remember there was a time I only had a weekend to actually develop a full app that actually did quite a lot of things, and I did it at the end of the day, but at least I had the time to actually prepare my code and get everything ready, make sure that everything was actually set up correctly and all of that stuff. Also, I prefer it because that's actually the most ideal or realistic aspect. So this is obviously an opinionated thing. This is my opinion, because in a working environment, you're not going to be writing data structures and algorithms. You're actually, as an Android developer, you're going to be writing Android code. You're going to be building apps, or you're going to be contributing to an existing app. And yes, as you're writing your code, you are going to be utilizing the concepts of data structures and algorithms, but that's not necessarily going to be your thing that you're going to be writing. So for me, that's why I feel strongly that a take-home project is actually more ideal, because you're actually preparing that person for their real-world environment, what they're actually going to be encountering when they start working.
That's me.
Awesome. Yeah, I agree. I think it's really great, as people who present interviews, to allow the option, because I think at different points in your life you have more capacity for one or the other, and being able to choose really is helpful to whoever the interviewee is. Like, some people might not be able to dedicate that weekend that Ahmed was talking about to do this project, and some people might just have to spend, you know, that 1 hour, and they might prefer to do the 1 hour. So it's really trying to meet the interviewer where they are and help them with whatever process they're most comfortable with. Personally, I prefer the project as well, because I like to be able to give that time to it and not feel the pressure that you feel when you are essentially live coding in front of someone who is literally there to judge your progress. That's a lot for anyone, I think, and some people are better at it than others. But at least in Android, I think the project approach is much better, because that's how we work. Like we, like Akhmed was saying, is the algorithms are a part of it, but only to a degree in terms of what we actually need to know how Android works. And there's so many other problems that can come up, and, you know, optimizations for devices that server doesn't have to deal with, and just in terms of, you know, battery and rotation and views, and it's a lot that Android can do, and the project is much better at encapsulating those things.
That's very well said. And I feel like what Hamid said to Matt, did you want to say something?
Nope. No, that's all. I wanted to pass it over.
Oh, cool. So I was just saying what Hamid said was a pretty good answer, because that was my thoughts exactly. However, for me currently, I feel like I really don't even have enough time these days to do a take home. So I'm definitely going with let's do it, the live one. But that's just based on my preference, because I'm like, oh no, I don't think I could do a take home project. And this is just because I have a lot going on. Like I'm a mom, I have other things to do, I have work. So I think, let me check. Subra, you had a question?
I didn't have a question. I just wanted to add to the same question about take home assignment versus doing another thing that I personally prefer take home projects, because I don't have to do a lot of things off my memory, like remembering APIs and other things. And when someone's actually seeing your code, I mean, you might just forget even like standard functions that you tend to use, even if it's an algorithmic interview. And not all interviews let you Google things regarding the APIs. So that's one point that I usually like put in favor of take-home assignments, that you can like take your time, think about it, and you're not in a rush.
That's a very good point too. So please utilize that. If you're trying to find a job or trying to interview too, please look into those. Because I do know there are companies that actually give you like a simple assignment. Mostly the assignment looks like the standard, like just take this API, make it run, display. I mean, it's kind of like standard. That's what I'm noticing, because many people say that. But I do know there's a company, I'm not going to mention, that actually a friend of mine told me you're given, they give you the project ready, and then they tell you just, we have this project, so build upon it. So I think some companies are choosing that route too. So you might want to play around. And I feel like most of them, if you're playing around with the code labs pretty well, it's going to be pretty easy, because it's standard, like what they do like on the code labs. Like you're given this and then you're told build upon this. How would you do this? Like with the to-dos on there, which is awesome. Coda, you had a question? Coda Salam, thank you very much, Subra, for that input too.
Hello.
Hello, we can hear you.
Hi, I'm Salman. So I don't have any question, but I want to talk about the UI. Means I had a conversation with some of my friends. So they told me that you can't build a best UI in XML, okay? But I shared my application with them, and I told them that you can also build XML in XML, okay? So they are told me that you should work on Flutter. So my question is that, is Flutter based or Android?
So are you asking if Flutter is easier than Android?
Yeah, as for the UI, means...
I can answer this one.
Oh, sure. Take it on.
I think for Android UIs, it's best to go as native to Android as possible. It's very hard to replicate the same experience that your users are going to expect in your apps when you're using certain cross-platform solutions like Flutter or some of the ones that used to be around before. And just especially with, you know, new stuff like Jetpack Compose coming out, it will just be more accessible, hopefully, to add really complex views and animations and stuff like that. So I think it's better to go the Android native route, especially since learning Compose could eventually end up translating to the multi-platform solution as well. But we don't know how that all is going to end up yet. But on that note, I do have to run because I have a 2 o'clock meeting my time. So I'm not going to end the space. I'm just going to chill on mute for a little bit because I want to keep the discussions going. But Madonna, thank you so much for taking over and doing such an awesome job. And thank you to everyone for joining and being so wonderful to talk with and, you know, becoming so welcoming to everyone wanting to be a part of this community. But with that, I got to run, and I will probably either see you all online on Twitter or next week.
Yes, thank you very much, Matt. So Matt is my amazing co-host too when I host, because we decided to be just co-hosting together. Like sometimes you can host, I can host sometimes, which is super awesome. And I see a hand raised up from, I hope I'm pronouncing your name correctly, Subra, but thank you very much, Coders. Sorry, I forgot your name, Coders, for asking that amazing question. So Subra, what's up?
It's Salman.
Oh, Aman, thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, I mentioned on Instagram recently.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah, I wanted to add a bit to Salman's question where about what's best like for UI. I mean, up until recently, just for, I would say, the sake of UI, Flutter was amazing. Because you could see the amount of samples people would publish on Twitter and other spaces around traditionally some UI that would be very complex in Android was, I would say, a bit easier to construct in Flutter. The APIs were that flexible. But then recently with Jetpack Compose, you would also see that the same trend has started there as well. So I would say without Jetpack Compose, Flutter would be superior for just purely building UI. I mean, in terms of how fancy things you could build and how easy they would be. But with Jetpack Compose, you have good competition. So there is no straight away winner here.
I actually think you answered that question correctly. I was trying to find a nice phrase for that, but you've answered it correctly. Bowen, your hand is raised up. You're next, and then we can have Harney. And then I think we'll be wrapping up in the next 15 minutes so that at least we can give everybody a chance to get back to amazing things they do. And also, before I give Bowen the chance, I just wanted to say thank you very much, everybody, for coming to hang out with us. We appreciate everybody very much. Please check out Android Dev Hangout, because we do have like our monthly sync where we come together and now see each other on a Zoom call and then get to know each other. So there'll be like a notification coming out soon for the next meeting. And I think our last meeting, we had Zach from Google just giving a talk on Jetpack Compose. So you can learn amazing things in the meeting too. So, Bowen.
Thanks, Manoda, for allowing me to speak. So, yeah, guys, so Balvinder this side. So I've been developing, you know, mobile apps, specifically Android and hybrid apps from 10 years now. And I've been interviewing a lot of candidates, you know, for different companies. So, yeah, since we are in this space talking about careers in Android, so I would just like to suggest, you know, a few topics or, you know, whenever we submit any assignment to the company, what exactly they look for in that assignment. And when you give the interviews, what are the topics that we can brush up, you know, whenever we appear to any interview. So the first one would be, you know, something related to the Android architecture, or mostly like, you know, lifecycle related things. Let's say live data, state flow, and, you know, other things like channels and all. And then view model. When it comes to view model, they are specifically looking for your experience in, you know, sharing the view model between fragments, between, what you say, the navigation graph. And then, you know, activities and fragment lifecycle, they should be, you know, you should brush up those things. And the next thing is related to networking, what sort of network libraries you use, you know, and then let's say, you know, are you aware about, yeah, is anyone speaking?
No, sorry, go on.
Okay, yeah. So when they, for networking, what sort of libraries you are aware of, cache the data, you know, SSL pinning, interceptors, and all those things. So how good you are in that,
That is the, you know, it is one factor that they look into. And then comes your dependency injection. You know, we all know like Hilt, Coin, and all sort of things. And then comes the security. So in security, you know, encryption, encoding, we should know the differences between those. And how can you securely store your, let's say, keys, you know, like encrypted shared preferences. And within a code, let's say you have to store some keys. Usually, you know, people put that in Gradle files and all that. You know, what is the best way of doing that? Let's say you have to put some Firebase key or let's say some Algolia key or what sort of SDKs you use. So that's one thing. And another thing, you know, that they usually look into is your knowledge about async programming or background tasks. You know, let's say coroutines, services, you know, and whatnot, you know, foreground services and all. And the last thing, unit test cases. So yes, so these are certain topics, you know, that usually people look into when you submit your assignments and when we, you know, you appear for an interview. So yes, that's what I wanted to, you know, share. Thank you.
Oh my goodness. Thank you very much, Baldwin, for that. I mean, that was amazing. I mean, I think you've covered everything. And that's why I'm saying this is the best community I've ever been to. Because look at that. You just summed it up for everybody here that's looking either for a job or trying to find another job and try to, or even trying to join the Android space and doesn't know how the interview process goes. So thank you very much for that. Please give him a follow. We have Harney, your hand was raised up earlier, so you can go first.
Okay, thank you so much, Maduna, for the opportunity. So I've had this question on my mind for a while now, and I don't know, would you say that the domain data and presentation layering in Android development is an ANSI pattern? Yeah. That's my question.
Sorry, say that again. You didn't get that part, last part.
The domain data presentation layering, is that an anti-pattern in Android development?
Great question. I just want to throw it back to our speakers. Anybody want to take that first?
Maybe I'll try to answer that. So I didn't understand the full question, but you're talking about something, you know, domain and presentation layer, right?
Yeah.
So usually if you see in a clean architecture, we use, you know, domain and use cases and the presentation layer. So mostly, you know, the recommended architecture for that is MVVM. People say it MVVM plus clean. Okay. Whereas in domain, you usually have the use cases and the presentation, obviously your UI part of stuff. And then, you know, then you write the use cases, which actually deals with, let's say you want to fetch data from the repositories and all, you will write the use case for that. I don't, you know, very confident if I understand your question correctly, but I just try to answer that for, you know, what exactly is domain and presentation.
No, exactly. Yeah. So you have that and you have the use cases and mm-hmm. then you have the repository and the use cases is doing the action of the repository. So it's more like we have like redundant uses of all of these things. The repository is already doing the work, so why do we need a use case?
Okay, so why do we write a use case? It's actually, you know, separation of concern is the, you know, what is the base for our, you know, every architecture. So if you, you know, usually if you write code in clean architecture, usually it's like, you know, you have to write more code actually, what people say. Reason being, for every new API, you know, you will write a use case. Right. Let's say in one repository, let's say you have a user repository wherein you have a user detail API and then user profile or let's say, you know, user settings or something. So usually with MVVM, you would simply create, a, you know, one repository that will have all these three APIs, all these three different three functions. But with the clean, you will, you know, separate the things out further. Now in this case, you will have three use cases. One use case will give you user details. And another use case for user settings. So, I mean, the whole concept is to, you know, separate the things, decouple the things, so that you can use this use case anywhere, in any other repository.
Okay, but is this not going to get bloated at some point in a very large application?
Sorry, come again, please.
I said, is this not going to get bloated at some point in a very large application?
Yes, that entirely, like I said it before, yeah, the application gets bloated mostly with MVV and clean architecture. That's how it entirely depends upon your project. If it's like a small scale project with hardly, you know, 3 to 4 screens, you know, you can go with MVVM plus clean. That actually make it, you know, nicer to, you know, proceed with. But let's say if it is a very complex project, you can stick to the MVVM only. See, the end result of any architecture is, you know, how the things are decoupled, you know, and you should be able to unit test your code. That's it. You know, there is no hard and fast rule, you know, to choose any of the architecture. Architecture is usually, you know, they are created to, you know, solve a problem. And there are tons of architectures to choose from. It purely depends upon your, you know, project.
I think that's a very good point, Balan, because I feel like that's what we also, like, have, we, from my previous company and also my current company, it's about how accessible your code can be and how easy can it be when you want to test it. Because sometimes you don't want to overcomplicate it, especially when you're dealing with a lot of this, the Android system stuff, such that you can't even test your own code, you know? Can you hear me?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Anybody else wanted to answer that, Hamid, or anybody want to throw in points on that? If there's not,
just to add on, Balwind actually just come accidentally, which is, yeah, I think earlier you were trying to, I think the thing you were trying to find earlier was hit the nail on the head. Yeah, so I think, yeah, definitely hit the nail on the head. Just to reiterate,
I was saying the snake, and I was like, what snake am I talking about?
Yeah, also based Android actually recently released a whole documentation now on the recommended, and again, it's also opinionated. So they basically say, this is what we feel should be the architecture going forward when you're writing your apps. It is up to you if you want to use it, but these are the sections that we think that you should actually include. So the domain layer is actually labeled as an optional layer. You don't have to have it. It is recommended to have it because it actually sits between the UI layer and your data layer. So in my case, for instance, and having that use case like you mentioned there, it actually helps me separate nicely my repository and my views, and actually have this layer that's then going to transform the information for my use cases. Especially because, like, let's say you're going to be fetching data from an API, it's going to come in a certain way, and you can't control how it's going to come in. Every single API is going to, the API developers are going to design them in whatever way they feel, and obviously it's not going to be exactly how you then want it within your app. And so you can actually use your domain layer to transform it into something that your domain, your app, your application is then going to now make use of within your application. Yeah, that's all.
Thank you so much. That was very, very clear. Thank you.
Go.
Very well said. I think we're, oh my goodness, this is so amazing. I feel like, oh my God, we need more time, but I have to let everybody go. This was so amazing, and that's why we'll keep doing this every Friday. This is an amazing session. I really did enjoy this. This is one of the best spaces I've been into, where we just had a freestyle session, just talking about everything Android. And it felt like people came up here, people gave amazing feedback, people gave valuable resources and inputs. I want to thank everybody for taking your time today, for being here, and for coming up to share with us. Please, thank you. Please make sure you follow Matt and I. We do this every Fridays. And also Android Dev Hangout. That's an account we created just to help keep everything in one place, like for announcing the Android Dev Hangout once in a month, where at least we can just come meet up. If you can make it, we have the spaces here now, as you can see. Everybody can come connect and also reach out to anybody on top here. Hamid is an amazing person that comes to our space. Please follow him too. I think he's already part of the family now because he's always here. And every amazing person that comes here, I'm just very happy. That's all I'm trying to say. Thank you very much again. I think I have a meeting also coming up at 2:15. 2:30 actually, so I need to prepare for that. And I think Matt went for a meeting. And also, this is just to mention, we collaborated with, I think he's, I'm forgetting his name, but he's in India. So he's going to be doing a space, an Android Dev Hangout space on Indian time, because he did say that he really enjoys the spaces, but he can't make it due to a time zone. So he's going to create one for the Indian time. So if you're in that time zone, please support him too when he starts his spaces, just collaborating with us. This is super awesome. Thank you very much, everybody. And have a lovely weekend. I think here in America, we're going to be having Martin Luther King Jr. on Monday. So it's a holiday. So have a long weekend. And for anybody from around the world, please enjoy the lovely weekend and see you on Friday. Also, one more thing. If you want to come up and give us a session or talk about something, please feel free to message Matt or me and tell us, hey, I would like to come and speak about my experience, or I would like to come and share about something I've learned about Android or just something. And then you can give us the context about what you want to talk about. And then we'll be gladly to host you and allow people to come up and ask you questions. So please, yeah, it's a learning for everybody. And I feel like now I'm rambling, hitting, oh my goodness, that thing kept disappearing. Hamid, help me out. What is it again?
Hit the nail on the head.
Every time I want to say hit, I'm just thinking of a snake. Goodbye, everybody.
No worries.
拜拜, everyone.
I think we lost Madonna there.
Supposed to end because he's the host. So I'm like, Matt, are you there? But goodbye, everybody. And thank you very much for hanging out with us.
Thank you so much for your answer.
Totally.
Bye. Have a good
one. Bye, everyone.
Bye, everybody. I'm still waiting for Matt to see my message. Okay, Matt.